My name is Sandy Hickox, and I am an alcoholic. I thought I was nervous until I saw him. Now, did y'all see him? I mean, he was up here just like this, and I thought he was fixing to fall. You know, I'm going, I am not nervous at all, because I'm trying to feel. I mean, Tim, I'm not laughing at you, but you made me feel better, and I thank you for it. Woo! I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share with y'all, because I'm okay. When Wendell and I pulled up at the gates, I couldn't believe it. You know, I couldn't believe that I'm here. I come in the door, and Jean's over there with some people that I've never met, and Ed is one of them. And I said, you know, my drinking never took me to places like this. And he said, yeah, they did. You're here. I'm going, see what those long timers would do for you? Oh, gosh. Did I tell you my name, that I'm an alcoholic? Okay. I get so scared when I get up here, and it's nothing but my ego, and Ed reminded me of that earlier. I had a lot of people come up and say, you know, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. But, you know, the only time I think I'm not going to be all right is when I think I've got to impress you with something that happened to me or something that I've done. Now, my sponsor assures me that there are people in this meeting that have drank more than I have, you know, done everything more than I have. So, you know, I'm going to forget impressing anybody and just go up here and just tell what happened to me. You know, and I want to thank it. Thanks. I want to thank it's going to be a long afternoon. I want to thank everybody that came up and said, you know, you're going to be all right, and the people that touched me, and that was just wonderful. And I had never, Ed told me that he invited all 4,000 of his friends, and I never one of them showed up. I have spoke in front of conferences before, but nothing with this many people. This hotel is just something else. Our room is big as our house. I mean, me and Wendell are running around. You know, we're just having a good time. You know, that's just amazing. Thank you, AA. You know, thank you, AA. I am the second of four kids. My mama brought us up by herself. My dad loved them honky-tonks and them women. You know, and my mama used to always tell me that, you know, once I started drinking and everything, that you're just sorry just like your dad. You know, and that's what he did. I know that today. I didn't know that then. I didn't know what the deal was there. My oldest brother was a father figure in our house. I had a younger brother that was the clown that kept us all laughing. And then I had a brother under me that I hated because he was so good. He did everything right. He never screwed up nothing. You know, nothing. I mean, he baked perfect cakes. He always made straight A's. He was never afraid to tell you exactly how he felt. You know, I remember a time in school, you know, we lived in an old cotton mill house. My mom worked in the cotton mill trying to raise us. And Al was sitting in, but it was a four-room house, and we each claimed one. I mean, he had a living room, the kitchen, the bathroom, and the bedroom. And I was in his room. And me and my younger brother were trying to come through with some friends. And boy, he just, you're not coming through my room. And he just beat the crap out of us. You know, and we didn't go through his room. You know, but he was never afraid that they wouldn't like him because he wouldn't let them come through. And I always was. I was always afraid that if I didn't do this, you wouldn't like me. If I didn't do that, you wouldn't like me. I have always been this tall, I don't think I ever grew up. I've just always been tallest and last in line and behind Roy Samples, and he had glasses, and I hated it. You know how they do you in, well, I don't know how they do you in school now, but used to, a long time ago, they had always put shortest to the tallest, you know, and I was always at the end of the line. And girls, in my head, were not supposed to be taller than the boys. It wasn't supposed to work like that. But there I was. And I was always walking hunched over trying to be a short ass. Never had any weight until after I married Wendell, my mama says, but I never had any weight on me growing up, and they would pick at me on the ball field. You know, grandma long legs and stick your tongue out and turn sideways and look like a zipper, you know, and I would just die. I can laugh about those things now, but at that time they were devastating to me. You know, I didn't have any boobs, I didn't have any butt, I didn't have nothing. You know, I just was long and tall, and that's all. And they used to tell me that, and I would go home, you know, it pissed me off, and I'd go home and just cry my eyes out. I wouldn't let them see, me cry, but God, it just devastated me. You know, for the next day at school, I'd scrunch over a little bit, you know, trying to be a little bit shorter, and, you know, today, my husband gets aggravated with me, but, you know, today's clothes are all, you know, they're all high-waisted and cut down low. Well, hell, I've been wearing those all my life. I'm not wearing them today. They make clothes for tall people, so, no thank you. You know, and that's just one of my little deals, you know, and in sobriety, y'all have allowed me, y'all have given me the stuff, whatever it is inside of me, that it's okay for me to be whatever I am, and to have my likes and my dislikes, and I'm okay with that. Y'all gave me that. Had my first drink when I was 13. Now I'm going to tell you. I don't remember getting drunk. I don't remember anything. But what I do remember is when I had that first beer, it was hat through with, and I'll never get it. We slipped by the basketball game, me and a bunch of friends, and I took that drink, and I'm going to tell you, kaboom, kaboom. I had a... Instantly. I couldn't believe it. You know, now I know why my daddy drank. Oh, God bless you. Oh. Instantly, I felt like I had that stuff that girls were supposed to have. I mean, I had hips and everything. I ain't kidding you. I mean, I could talk to them guys, and I wasn't scared of what they thought about what I said. I wasn't scared of how I looked, because I knew I looked good, because I had them, you know. I didn't have a care in the world. For the first time ever in my life, I was okay. First time ever. I was okay. Hey, I found my answer. Screw things. You know, and that was my attitude. I started hanging around with the boys that was doing the deal, because the girls out in my school, they didn't drink, and they didn't do no dope. They didn't do anything. They went to school and got their homework, and I didn't have time for that now. I didn't. I was out there, and I was running with them boys, and I was keeping more school than I was making, and they were calling my mom and coming in with a note, because they knew, you know, I wasn't there. I was out in the woods drinking with them boys. All my life, I had always grown up around a big family of boys. I mean, I had three in the house, and we always moved around six or seven. Never lived around any women. Never did. And that was okay, because Mama said they wasn't to be trusted anyway. I could really identify with Lewis last night, that we're taught a lot of things, a lot of fears from some other people, and I picked up a lot of my mom's crap. A lot of her fears. Y'all know what I'm talking about. And I just loved it. I mean, my brothers taught me to hold a gun in front to catch a spider web, so they always made me walk first. Mama wouldn't let me camp out with them because I don't know why. I do today, but I didn't know then. I didn't understand it. You know? And it made me mad. She'd want me to stay in the house and bake them cakes, and I said, hell, let all do it. Who likes it? You know, I don't. I never understood the differences, you know, because I've always come up around the boat, all the way around the boat. So I'm hanging out with him now, and we're out there, and we're just getting in a lot of trouble. And Mama didn't have about all she could take, you know, because I'm wearing to her all the time. I'm saying I'm going to the show, and I ain't seen the show yet, you know. I mean, I just, I'm going up to him, and I come back a couple of days later, you know, something's wrong with the teacher, and she just can't handle it anymore. And she told me, you know, you're out of here. You know, we had this discussion not too long ago, you know, about that particular conversation. I heard her tell me that she kicked me out, and I'm like 13 years old. Well, actually, that's not true. This gets a little tricky, because me and an aunt changed my birth certificate to say I'm a year older than I actually am, okay? So I can get my learner's license. And why we didn't look it for two, I don't know, so I could get my driver's license, but we didn't. We only went one. So, you know, when you ask me how old I am, I have to stop and think, because I got two numbers in my head. You know, I tell you what, in sobriety, you can clean all that up with the IRS. You can tell them that you got two social security numbers. You only want one now.
Uh-oh.
I swear I made that amend. Oh, God. You know, but we...
Uh-oh.
Well, maybe I need to go a little deeper here. Oh, God. But anyway, and she told me, she said, you... That bothered me. You know, she just told me, she said, you can't stay here. Well, we had this conversation not too long ago, and what she told me, she said, is that I couldn't drink anymore in her house. Well, as far as I was concerned, she kicked me out. I know today that was one of the hardest things that she had ever had to do because I was her only girl. I was the only girl she had. And I had become an embarrassment to the town because whatever I had to do to get you to like me, that's what I did. And I was running with a lot of boys. And we know, well, I know where that took me. And if you're an alcoholic woman, you know where that took you. I don't have to go to the details here. I'll talk to you one-on-one anytime. But I mean, I just, that's what I got into. My reputation was bad. My brothers were ashamed of me. The smart one in school, I think this is, well, I like this anyway. Well, one of the teachers and everything, and then he got in his class and said, are you saying these brothers? And he said, yep. He said, I'm just going to fail you now. And I think that's the only class he ever had trouble with. But you know, and that was my, I liked that for a long time because, by God, teacher training. You know, I just hated him that much. I didn't realize until I got in the program that to hate somebody, you got to really love them the whole lot. And I didn't know that. I went to stay with an aunt. It wasn't long. You know, I've been used for it. It don't take me long to use up people in my life because I'm like a leaf. I just sucked you dry and I never give nothing back. And I'm always troubling, lying, and cheating, and stealing. I mean, that's what I bought you on. That's what I bought you. I've done the geographics. You know, back when I was coming up, I'm from a small town. I am from a small town. And we used to race the deputy sheriffs down to the club, you know, on the weekends in Phoenix City and stuff. And get down there and get drunk with them and then race them home. I mean, so we didn't have to worry about the DUIs and all that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, hell, they were with us. You know? I always ran with the older crowd because I was always wanting to sit in. After Mama kicked me out, I started waiting tables in a little restaurant because that's all I mean, I quit school. I didn't know how to do anything else. And in that restaurant, I had my first spiritual experience that I saw, and he walked in the door. And it was the prettiest thing I'd ever seen in my life. I'm kidding. He was tall, dark, and handsome, and he had a lot of money in his pocket, and I knew that if I had enough money, I would be all right. So I made it my business to make him my business, and it wasn't long we were living together. Now this has been a while ago, and this was back before that was fashionable. And again, I embarrassed my mother and my brothers. They couldn't believe that I was shacked up on the hill with some man older than me, and it was just bad. Well, he built a nightclub, and I went to work there. Me and this guy, we've done a lot of drinking together. We've done a lot of fighting together. And today I know that if I'd kept my mouth shut once or twice, I wouldn't have got hit so much. I know that. But I also know that for the longest time, I got a lot of sympathy by wearing my bruises. You know, a lot of people, oh, my God, you need to leave him. You know, yeah, I know. You know, he just treats me so bad. You know, and I got a lot of sympathy. I got a lot of free drinks using that. Like I said, when I come to y'all made me look at my part. And like I said, if I had shut up when he told me to shut up, I probably wouldn't have got hit. I know today that God's been watching out for me a long time, and I want to share one experience in that relationship. We were in the apartment one day, and we were fighting, and he was drunk, and I was drunk, and I was like a little... The only thing I can think of is a little chihuahua dog just, hey, 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 hey. That's the way I was on him, you know? And I just wouldn't shut up, wouldn't leave him alone, just aggravating, couldn't kick me away, shoo me away, or nothing. I was right back, you know? And he pulled it in. Well, ain't no big deal. You ain't going to use it anyway, you know. And he put it to my head and pulled the trigger. I said, oh, it's so big. You know. And then he pulled the trigger again, and it went off in the ceiling. Now I'm going to tell you, I didn't even have sense enough to know the way it happened that night until I got to y'all. I know that God was doing for me what I could not do for myself that day. I know today that I had a couple. Oh God, you know, maybe I'm forgetting. And we went on like that. I could pack a car.
Quit.
No, only that's too fat. Don't take long to pack them. One of the girls I walked with today, let me tell you, she just got stuff and she had when she was a child. Not me. You know why? You can't get that too fat. She just leave it. That's what I did. I didn't know that was the reason I didn't have some of that stuff until one of my experiences in this room with y'all, sharing with y'all. It dawned some of this stuff comes to me. That's why. My grandmother, when she died, I loved jewelry always had. She left me her jewelry box. And it was one of my most prized possessions. In a drunken stupor, I left it. The only thing I've got is this penis from that. And this penis is really special to me. But, you know, as you, you know, when I get to drinking, nothing was sacred. Nothing. I mean, you know, if they won't let you in to get your stuff, so you can't pay the rent. Well, I didn't have the money anyway. I was gone to the box. You know, that's where my money went. Like I said, I packed that quick, and I wound up in New Orleans, Louisiana, on one of my little geographics, and he didn't come after me. So I'm down there from little old big town, about the size of this room, and I'm telling you, New Orleans is something. You can buy liquor in the liquor store. I mean, where I'm from, you have to go to the bootlegger. And if you don't know him, you ain't getting in. You know, that kind of thing. You got to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody. And my God, hours in heaven. They don't never close the bars down. They just kind of scoop you to one side where you clean everything out, and they just keep going. You know, I just loved it. You found me a job in a bar, I was home. Yeah, but I'm about to doing the things that I always do. You know, and I'm a user and abuser of me at this point in my life, because that's my means of transportation and support. You know, and usually there's one back in the background. You may not see him, but he's back there, you know, and that's just what I do. My thoughts of New Orleans are just a couple of things. I remember working in the bar, and I remember coming through on like punch train in the car, and I didn't have no money, didn't have no gas. I just come through that. Everything was in my stacks in the car. You know, that's normal state for me. And I don't know how I got that way. But I tell you what I know about me at this particular time in my life. I know there was a man in Bob and there was a good con. That's what I know about me at that time. I used to tell people that I come home from New Orleans, you know, because my mother got sick and I'm such a, you know, such a daughter. That's clock. And we know it. You know, I've run out of people that I could use and abuse at that particular time, and Mama is the only place I could go. She said, you can come home on two conditions. Number one, you don't drink him. Number two, you get your GED. GED I didn't have any problem with, but drinking was another matter. That is where I've come to know that I've done some controlled drinking. I've done just enough to get by just to maintain, so I get my GED, get me a job, and get the hell out. You know, I could go back to doing what I was doing. Well, it wasn't long that I met a man who knew a man who knew a man. So I got my GED and got hired on to the railroad as a brakeman. Well, both personal men, if you want to get technical. But see, I always had in my head, if I just had enough money, I'd be all right, you know. And this man knew this man, and that's how I got on. It wasn't, I mean, I took the test and I passed it, but I know that it was that influence that got me that job. The government was behind the railroad to hire women. So there I was. So I started working on the railroad. Now I'm going to tell you. At that particular time, that was the place for me to be because I could drink as much as I want to. The hours were always weary, so you didn't have to worry about keeping a commitment. Yeah, you're gone. You know? And that's what I did. And today, I used to brag about this, but this is not a bragging thing today. I know several men that will not sit down and drink with me. You know, drink for drink, because I'd just blow him away, you know. And I don't remember what went on after that, and I remember coming through, couldn't find my bag, squalling because I couldn't find my bag, and I just put it down right outside the bar, and the bar never went to the room to get any rest or nothing, you know, and I think about those days, you know. Well, it wasn't making all this money. Now I'm hanging out with different class people. I'm not going to pop a meal anymore, you know, I'm uptown, and, well, that was my thinking, okay. So I started doing some other things, trying to control my drinking, because I'd get to drinking and I'd black out. Well, you can't black out when you got away on telephone calls. I mean, you got to be kind of consistent here. So I started doing another type of controlling my drinking, and that was listening to it. And the only thing that's real important for me here is that doing cocaine, not crack, but doing cocaine, I sold everything I had. At that particular time, I had money, and I was, you know, I had a car, I mean, a new car. And I had, you know, washing machines and dryers and clothes in the house and stuff like that. I started to acquire some of those things. And I'm going to tell you, it didn't take long. All that crap was gone. I have a vivid remember going down the road with dollies with a washing machine on it to the boat dealer. Not driving now. I'm pushing this sucker, you know. I know today that's the way I control my drinking. And I know that it got me in a lot of trouble. I come to one day and I got, you know, they're banging on the door and it's the cops. Well, that wasn't no big deal because I lived in a neighborhood where they sleep with it. You know, there was always after the guy next door, but I figured that was just, you know, that was just time too. So I opened up the door and they said, sit down. And they went through my house like they do on TV. Now I'm going to tell you, I thought it was just that stuff they did on TV. I didn't know they really did that. Well, they do. And they make a mess. They found what they were looking for. And I'm sitting there, I probably had on a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and everything, and I know I'm in trouble. Cause they, I mean, they done found that stuff, you know. And I better get dressed. So I'm a closer out on the line. So, you know, I sit down the hall and go out the back door. When you're in the middle of a bus, don't do that. They come around that trailer, I mean, from both sides, gun tops and everything, and I'm trying to get my pants off the line. Scared the hell out of me. I got them jeans and they carried me to jail. And I stayed there and stayed there and stayed there. Couldn't call him because she was home. You know, and he was the only one that had enough money to get me out. I didn't know. I didn't actually know what I was being arrested for. I know they probably tell you that when you're being booked, but I didn't know what it was. I wasn't paying much attention. Probably couldn't because I was in a fight. Well, I just woke up. Well, come too, to be honest. And they kept bringing in trays. I'll show you how sick I was. One of them cops told me that they had painted that room pink just for me, and I believed them. Is that pitiful or what? Is that wrapped up in yourself or what? You know, and my next thought was, how'd they know I was coming? Oh, man. Now, this is what I brought to y'all. Okay, this is what I brought to AA. This is what I brought. You know, and I am so grateful for the long time we've been AA. We've got the love and the patience to work with people like me. And I thank him. We called him. He come got me. Didn't go to a lawyer's office, didn't go home, take a bath, and went straight to the bar to see if I was mad. That's what I brought here. Totally set up there. That's the way I was. Okay. One of the guys that I worked with had been off somewhere, we used to drink together and all that kind of stuff, and when he got back, he quit. I mean, he'd come out of the house and talk about God and higher and all that kind of stuff, and I just thought he just flipped out. He didn't know. We really didn't know where he'd gone, but we had a lot of ideas, and it was a net word for sure. We knew it, even though you wasn't talking about it. Well, he come and he... Today I understand he was trying to test it, and he'd been to a treatment center. I did not have a clue then. You know, but the one thing that he said, if you want to keep your job, go do it. Sign me up, you know. Because all I was at that time was my job. And that's all I was. I wasn't nothing else. And, that was threatened. And I know today that I was in that jail now and I had something to tell him. I didn't say, if you help me get out of this one, I'll. Well, God, if you work this one out, I'll never do this one. None of that. All I ask is God hold me. But I turned to my bottom. I know that today. I did not know that then. I didn't understand what was going on. Well, they signed me up. You know, I did contact the lawyer and he said, if you go there, you're saying you're guilty. I said, well, hell, I am. And they got this stuff right there. You know, I mean, duh. So I went to the treatment center. And I'm going to tell you, I'd never heard of treatment center, never heard of AA, never didn't know nothing about alcoholism. I didn't know what was going on, didn't know what to expect. And today, my mama thinks that family week is the greatest vacation she's ever had. She'll tell you that. She has never ate so good and been treated so nice as the day when she come down there. Now, my mama is a very simple woman. Simple is not right, but it is right. She don't demand a lot of stuff to make her happy. She's okay being honest and hardworking and trying to do the right thing. That's all she needs. She don't care about clothes and fashion and the latest decor of the house. The girls her house is paid for and don't leave, she's fine. And if she's got a car that's got wheels on it and it runs, she's fine. You know, she is a simple woman. You know, and today I see her in much different place. Where's the treat? So I'm down there and I'm going, oh my God, what have I been going into? Because I didn't have a food. You know, and I heard a nurse come in and we were talking about the different drugs that I'd used and all that kind of stuff. And she said, come on. She said, you don't ever have to feel the way you're feeling inside. I never heard you do that. For the first time, I heard that. Because I had been feeling bad all my life. Because I was long and tall and that's all. You know, I didn't fit into the class. I didn't have that stuff that those girls had. I didn't know how they knew what and how to match up that stuff and how to put their eyebrows and how to fix that hair. You don't learn that something with the boys in the back seat of cars. I didn't. You learn that spending time with women in the room, you know, with doing that girl stuff. I just thought that female side of my brain was just burnt out by the dope or just undeveloped, or I didn't know. I did not have a clue that it was a learned trait. I didn't know that. So, this woman came in and she said, you don't need to feel like that again if you don't want to. So I started doing what they told me to do in that treatment center. And when I got finished with my 28 or 36 days, ever how long I was there, they said, well, you're not quite ready to go home. We want you to go to a halfway house. You know, if I don't go to the halfway house, I'm not going to get my job back. And I started feeling just a little bit of the stuff that we get here. You know, just a little bit of that food, a little bit of that, just a little, just enough to make me hungry for some more. Now, okay, sign me up. And there's only one problem with the halfway house they want to send me to, it was all women. Now, I ain't never been around a group of women bunched up together and for a period of time. I was scared. Because I'm okay. You know, my mama's thinking, you know, don't trust them women and everything. And I know what the kind of woman I was, and I figured they was all doing what I was doing, and I knew they wasn't to be trusted. So I went to the halfway house. And I found out that some other women had the same problems as I did. You know, and that's where I started about learning the magic of the clothes. And that's where I started finding out that we all are scared of each other. And the way that I protect myself is get real catty and bring out them claws and cut and scratch. And then if I can see. Maybe I can see. But anyway, I learned a lot from those women. In that halfway house, I found out that because my dad left was not the reason for my alcoholism. And that really didn't have anything to do with it. I found out that he wasn't responsible for my drinking. I found out there that I hate my brother so bad, I had to love him at some point. That's where I found out about this guy that I thought was so mean to me. You know, I found out that I played a part in that. Some of these little lights were too known to me. And I was real grateful. Finally, they told me I'm ready to come home, and I got even more scared because I knew my friends were going to come by and get me drunk. And these are the friends that I haven't seen since I've been arrested and I'm worried about, you know? But I was scared. So they gave me some numbers to call when I got home, and I picked up the phone, and I called, and I was walking the store because I'm scared they're going to come by and get me drunk. You know, I'm just scared to death. And we started going to meet the police. When I come in, I'm almost 15. My consciousness is almost nothing, you know, that you are. What? I'm 15 years sober. And when I first started going to meetings in the area where I lived, there was one meeting in our town a week. So we would get in the car, a bunch of us. I mean, we'd just pile, as big of a car, the more, I mean, we'd just be piling in, and we'd drive 30 miles to the next town for the meeting on a Tuesday night. And then we'd drive to another town for the meeting on the Easter night. And that's how we did it. And in that car, back and forth to those meetings, that's where I asked my questions. That's where I had people explain to me what happened in the meeting that I didn't understand. Let me tell you about my favorite guy in the meeting. My My sponsor tells me I need to clean up my mouth in the podium, and I try real hard to do this. But let me tell you, when I'm first sober, he's a son of a bitch. When I'm first sober, he's a son of a bitch. Today, I love him. He was a long timer in AA. He didn't give a crap about my feelings that wanted me to get sober, and he helped me like that. But I see him much different today, but these people are kind of talking about him, and so being texting every time. I'm standing in the meeting, and my name's Sandy, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict, because it's on the same treatment. And I want to know all this kind of stuff, and she was screaming across the room, "Man, I got hemorrhoids, too." What in the hell's that got to do with anything? He's old, I guess I could need a 3 hour, and I'd pray. Y'all told me to pray for him, so I'd pray for him. He would embarrass me. He wouldn't come pat me on the shoulder and honey. He would scream across the room. He didn't care if it would matter if we had this or that much. He wouldn't care if I... He didn't care who was there. It made me mad at her, my feelings, and I'd accept him all the way home, and I'd pay for him in the meeting. That son of a bitch was going to keep me out of my meeting. I deserve my share there. I'm going, my God. And I'd pray for him all the way back over there, and I'd get up, and I'd say, "I ain't saying I'm not calling him. Lord, I got him more, too." I'd just scream across the room. God. I'm sorry, baby. Nothing else would fit. I'm sorry. I didn't understand what in the world he was doing. And finally, this didn't go on just one meeting or 2 meetings. This is about a month. Who gives a about a hemorrhoid? I don't care. He didn't tell us his doctor, for God's sake. I'd text him going home, and I'd pray for him coming, And I didn't understand what he was doing. Fine. They don't let you just think about it until you ask somebody. They don't volunteer no information. Finally, I asked, "Why does Bob do that? Why does he do that?" "Come here, Sammy. Let's have a sit in the party." "Okay." Some of us sit down. "Mm-hmm. As long as you're different from us, you ain't going to have to do what we have to do here. And when you're aimed to anything else other than an alcoholic, you're different from us. And you're not going to do what we have to do this to stay sober and to have a happy, joyous, free life. It's when you get like us and start doing what we do here, talking about NAA, steps and all that kind of stuff. It's when you get like us that you can get better. As long as you're different, your ass is out of here." And then I heard that. That is. So see, I didn't get a little taste of it. Yeah. I didn't get a little taste of it. I can look in the mirror. Okay? I don't hate myself anymore. Not as bad. I have to do some more things, but I can look myself in the mirror. It was a long time I did. Well, went to the next meeting. I'm almost 16 and all that. I didn't say that I'm an alcoholic. And I can kill him away. I've had people come up to me after the meeting and say, "Did he really do that?" I said, "Hell yeah, he did." Thank you so much. For the old timers in here who love us, smart asses enough to tell us the truth. And do not care whether we like it or not. Those people are the ones I go to when my butt's about to fall off. I'm serious. Those are the people that can walk you through this program in those tough times and take pictures. One hand here and one hand here and won't let you fall and keep you moving forward. and you're in pain. And I'm going, hey, I didn't get here and everything wonderful and good they did, dude. But then the bottom fell off. I got here on these little trips to the meeting, me and this guy got to talking and everything, and we got holding hands, and we got dating, you know, and that's all, dating. And I've never dated before. Y'all know the deal. Never had them. And we didn't do anything until after we got married. No shit. I didn't understand it though. Now I'm okay. I thought something was wrong with me, the reason he didn't want me. I did not understand it. In my sick thinking that I brought to y'all, I couldn't understand a man and woman going to a meeting without sex involved. I'm serious, because that was the way I did sex at that particular time. I ain't kidding you, I was sick. One of the Al-Anons, and God bless Al-Anons, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for y'all, because in the little town where I live, the long-term sober guy and the Al-Anon wife were the stability of our group. Okay, the Al-Anon woman was the only woman in the group. I mean, for the most part, we had a lot of men in and out, but none to say. And she was the one that taught me about, that started teaching me about that woman too. She and David dug me a tears in that damn garden, her trying to show me what to do with them when he did them. I mean, how to put them up, you know, how to match up my clothes. She took me shopping. She started showing me about matching up stuff. She explained to me why he didn't want to go to bed with me, and I didn't understand it. She told me about that in that garden. You know, she told me what to do in the daytime because I didn't have a clue. I did not have a clue. I was never taught these things. So these Al-Anon ladies, and I appreciate that both of the speakers said earlier, because when me and Linda got together, you know, because he would come to a meeting with me, this is before he found out he was an alcoholic. But they labeled him Al-Anon. I said, oh, hell no, he's not. He wasn't going to know Al-Anon meeting. But in our area, if you're married to an alcoholic, an alcoholic goes to AA, then you're the Al-Anon. See, I know that difference today. Thank you. But the Al-Anon lady just she was an angel. And I was in the room for the gym. My oldest brother came down there hunting me. As I had, you know, geographic and didn't tell nobody and all that kind of stuff, and found me on the street selling myself, and he was just on the end spot. When I was sort of got those eyes that you straight through me never see. All my life I wanted this guy's approval and love, and I never felt like I had. And I came to y'all and I started getting new steps and doing an inventory and all that kind of stuff. And I had to make amends to him for the embarrassment that I caused him for the part of our relationship. Because I wanted that approval for that, I would do anything to that. And that carried us to a lot of different things. And for the first time in my life, because of what I had been learning in these rooms, I knew way down deep where I lived that I did not need his approval or his love to be okay. And I never had that knowledge before. So at the time for me to make my own decision, I made an appointment, and I went to him and I said, Ed, all my life I've loved you. And all my life I've wanted you to accept me and approve of me. I said, but today I don't need that serious. I would love to have a relationship with you, and it's time to do, and it's fine to do. And I walk away with it. Now, when this guy on the way asked me to marry this one that he didn't do nothing, my oldest brother walked me down the aisle and gave me a kiss. That's Alcoholics Anonymous program in action. That's what that is. Me as myself, he didn't have anything to do with me. Because I believe in them, if you did, and became like you, I started getting results of these actions. Had to make amends to that guy that, you know, used to be so mean to me. The reason I had to make amends to him is because when I went back to my mom area, I would see him come down the road, and I'd get down in the alley just to meet him. He said, you told me last time you saw me, if I ever see you again, I'll see you on the front. And I knew that he meant it. And I was scared. Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, that I got to get rid of this food. How do I do that? I do that by making amends and taking it. And I'm going to tell you, I was not looking forward to doing this at all. I was too. that we made an appointment in this public place because if there was going to be a murder, I was going to have witnesses. I'm not stupid either. You know, and I made amends. And I walked away there free. I had experienced many things in so many years. 5 years sober, I go next. And me and this guy, you know, we used to be Mr. and Ms. AA in our area. And we'd walk in the meetings like I shared earlier, and we'd hold hands and be cooing and cawing and smiling, get back in that car and fight all the way home. In AA, I'm not talking about out of AA, I'm talking about in AA. My home was the last place that I even attended the place these principles were. The very last place. I come in here to be honest with y'all, kind of. And, to the point that I could be at that particular time, because I think I was really trying the best I could do. You know? And I kept wanting my God to be like his God, and you don't work that way, and I got real screwed up and all that, you know, and I don't know. I just got real screwed up and all that. And we just got to go. And it's not that easy. I suffered with it, and we had that line down the middle of the house, and this is my side, and this is your side, and don't you dare talk, and don't say a word to me. And I'm through this. Going to meetings, getting out of that car, hold, grabbing her hand, and turn to this, and just walking in smiling. Get mighty sick like that, I did. I had also isolated myself because, you see, I'd gotten hope of those doors, all these book tapes, and me and this, about five of us in this room, and we had done this meal, and y'all knew the people couldn't be like that. I'm going to tell you, that kind of attitude, you don't get me vicious. And we started agreeing. At least we all face kids together. I mean, you know, we just got away from everybody and just got sick. Something that I need to remember. A baseball teacher, myself included, was part of that group, only one of us still got a meeting. The rest of us, I don't know where they are. They don't get a meeting anymore. They don't do AA anymore, don't come around anymore. But I know I got real sick in that. I got real self-righteous. And my butt fell. That's when I went to Mr. Curate of Hemorrhoids, Toby O.G., you know, so I saved him. And I asked him to help me. Because he had been saying some things in the meeting that started making sense to me, and I needed some help. I was going crazy, and I'm 5 years sober, and I'm not drinking. And drinking was not an option for me, but eating a gin bonus was. Because I'm miserable and I don't make it to do. I'm not drinking and going to meetings and I hate them and I hate you and I, you know, it's better for you. There's hope. There's a token call for alcoholics anonymous. It involves death and it involves getting sick. That's what I had to do. I had to be told by the anonymous and I submitted that one. I didn't tell him nothing. I didn't have no answers. I was asking for anything they asked me to do. And I tried to get him better. And he told me that I'd quit spreading the disease, start tearing the covers of the movie, even if I couldn't keep my mouth shut and then fairways. Talked to him and him alone about my problems. And he would direct me to where else I would need to go with other people. You know, because he knew people who had the same reason. I can always find people to whine and sniffle to. It's hard to find people that see the solution. And he knew those people. And that's the reason he wanted me to quit prep. Well, he told me, quit spreading the disease. You know? Because I was doing a good job at it, because I'm still sick. God bless you, Lord. He saved me, my dear. And I'm scared of you. Today I've been some days and I've been a long time sober there. And it's thank you for me. And I could tell you all the people that, just like you did. And you know, we got to go to the penis, you know, he's an old fart and I'm a little penis. Being called a little penis has never lived from this, as it lives from him. I am kidding, because this man is this
Hey, I'm about 5 years sober, and you know, I'm over the crazy, so I'm about 6 years sober. We get going around and do it, and I met a man. Tall, dark, and handsome, and just swept me off my feet. fell in love with him, and we didn't work out. Didn't work out. And it was a growing process for me, and I am real grateful for that. Real grateful. For me, you know, and I got over that, and I'm going to meetings and all this kind of stuff, and everything's walking along pretty good, and that thought comes to me, you know, wait, I gotta tell you, court, I didn't have to go to jail. When I got arrested, I did not have to go to jail. So first offender's probation, okay, and done all that, I mean, done the probation gig and all that kind of stuff, and paid the fine and all that stuff, and didn't have to go to jail. But why? The only reason that that's important to me is because when I was before that judge, it was okay with me that I go to jail. I wasn't going to like it. But y'all have taught me that the only way that I can get free of this crap is become responsible for my actions. And I was willing to do that. Not saying I liked it a bit. Okay, well, I didn't have to go to jail, and I was 1 month coming off probation, and I went to the vocate school because the railroad offered a payoff, and I took it, and I went to learn how to do something legal because I didn't know how. So I went to the vocate school and took a little accounting course and all that kind of stuff, and I'm applying for jobs now. And I'm going to tell you, all my life when I went into to apply for jobs, there's been that woman in the window with her long polished fingernails and her makeup just right and her hair just right, and you could never get past that ever. If I ever got past her, I had the job, but just getting past her. I hate them women in that window. They was always so intimidating to me. And I'm starting going for interviews now. I'm fixing to complete my little course and all that kind of stuff. And there's one job that's a really good job, and making more money than I have seen other than the railroad. But this is a different type of work, and I wanted this job. But I knew after I'd done the application and everything, they got that one little blank. You know, have you ever been arrested for, been busted? You know, that one. Okay. I am 1 month coming off probation. Now I have first offender's probation. As soon as I come off, they're going to wipe that record clean, right? And I'm 1 month. And I'm going to lie like hell. I know that if I'm going to tell them that I've got arrested for all this crap, that they're not going to give me that job. I know that. So I'm asking with it and everything, and I go to this old timer, and I told him my dilemma. He said, look, Randy, he said, you're either going to have to do AA or do it your way. God. The little bit of time that I had practiced the AA way, it always come out better, you know. And oh, hell, God's going to put you where he wants you to be. You're going to have to trust him. I'm still wanting to lie. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to lie. So I go in there, and I talk to this guy that's doing the interview, and I answer him. I tell him the deal. I'm 1 month coming off probation. I'm about 4 years sober at this point, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I said, what do you want me to put right here? He said, just leave it for me. I said, thank you. Excuse me. I said, thank you so much for your time. And I just walked on out and kissed that job goodbye and knew I wasn't going to have it. When I got home, they had called me and wanted to give me that job. I had been on that job for 12 years. That is Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not me. That is a God of my understanding working through y'all. And I guarantee you, if I ever get out of these meetings, I am just sunk. Because I come to my meetings to get my messages from God. I heard somebody say that, and I love it. Because that's what happens for me. Okay, now, this job, I got my name on the door, for God's sake. Can you believe it? I can. Every time today, if I'm in a bad mood, all I got to do is just look at that name on that door. And no, I don't, you know, you can't get there from where you punch a tree on the door. Step through Alcoholics Anonymous, doing this deal. And it's tough. It was tough for me. Okay? I'm working on this job, and I'm going through the divorce and all this kind of stuff, and there's a guy there that's going through the divorce, and we're good friends, and he's got a couple of kids, and I know if I had kids, I'd be all right. Y'all tried that, too. Well, guess what? Kids don't make you all right. We got married, and I tried to help him raise those two little babies, and I'm okay. I see my mama in a completely different light. My mama raised four of us, and I don't see how in the world she did it, working and cleaning. She's more of whatever than I ever can even imagine. I did not realize that until that experience. The problem with Alcoholics Anonymous will work in all areas of my life if I do step. Now, I've got to take some action. And the actions that I took with those kids was trying to be kind and loving. And I tried not to judge their mother. And tried not to allow him to talk about the mother in front of them. Because that they were talking about, he was cussing their mother. And you can't do that. That makes them afraid to love her. And guilty because they do. It is a tough spot to put. Now, I ain't that smart. I just got good sponsors that I run my stuff by, and they help me like that, okay? And that's what they told me to do. Do not condone that behavior by either parent. Don't let him talk bad about her, and don't stand for it. I was invited to the son's graduation about a month ago. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's a problem with Alcoholics Anonymous. Those kids taught me so much. I'm up there and I'm wood because I cry a lot and I get real emotional and he's so good looking and I'm so proud. You know, that's not my kid, but it's the closest thing I got to one and they ain't gonna take him away from me. And I'm out, you know, he done graduated and I'm out on the field and Wendell's with me and the mom comes up and I'm crying. She said, you want to teach something to make you laugh? I said, yeah. She said, I bet you he's the only one got three wives on the field. There was the mom, there was the second ex-wife, and that's me, and then there was the present wife. And you know, we wasn't cussing and screaming and catting and nothing. We were all there, glad to see Travis graduate. We were all there acting like civil human beings. You know, and that, my friends, is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous at work. And I was amazed, you know, I was just amazed. Me and this guy got a divorce, and not even divorced yet, and a nosy neighbor, you know, we all got those, and I'm on. She introduced me in. And Wendell come to me at a time in my life that I knew that I was in trouble. I don't know how to do relationships, I don't know how to make a marriage work, and I damn sure don't need another man. And I know that. That has become, that's my knowledge. And I'm going, oh my God, you know, and I'm praying every day, and this old time, long timer in AA, you always fish in the same pond, you always gonna catch the same fish, you know. Hell, I ain't got enough sense to figure what that means out. they talking really, the long timers do, and then they leave it up to you to figure out what they mean by it. And anyway, you know, I found out that I had to do some looking way down deep inside of me. And me and this guy hit it off. I knew we hit it off, but I also knew that I couldn't go on like I was doing. Because I was wreaking havoc, and I just had to look at the part I played, and I took some time to do that. This took all time because this guy was talking to me about fishing the same pond. I thought he told me to leave Wendell alone, and me and him just kind of split. Now I'm praying to God every day for another sponsor because here I am crazy again. I'm about 10 years sober and I'm just going nuts and I don't know what to do about it. You know, and I'm crazy. And I'm, through divorces, you don't have a whole lot of money and my tape of the month club had run out a while back and I got a tape in the mail. The lady on this tape said, she said her first and last name from the podium and she said, I come to a point in my sobriety when I had to either get in AA or get out. And she's talking about in her sobriety. And I was there. And I knew I was there. I am forever grateful that she said her first and last name from the podium because I called the paper and the paper gave me her phone number and I called her phone number and I said, I need you. And you sponsor me. I had asked people, anybody that said, go to this lady and see if she'll sponsor you. I went to that lady and she told me no. I went to this lady and she told me no. And I went to this lady and she told me no. And I'm still praying, God, you got to send me somebody. I'm going that shit crazy here. Now, I talk to my God like that because that's the way I just do it. Probably ain't right, but that's just the way I do it. So that's where I was at that time. I was going crazy. And the tape comes. God doing for me what I can do for myself. And I'm going to tell you, I have a relationship with a sponsor that's long distance. She lives in California.
Now I live in Georgia.
Man, you couldn't get much more distant than that. Okay, God, you know, and it's working. She has some requirements of me, newcomers. There are requirements that I have to do if I want her to be my sponsor, and I'm willing to do that. Whatever she tells me to do, I'm willing to do. She told me that I asked me how many meetings I was going to. Well, I was going to one, whether I needed it or not. She said, honey, we'll up that to at least four. I'm going, four? Oh, my, in my head, I'm going, oh, shit, I got to go back to them people in that meeting that, you know, I used to wouldn't go to because they wasn't doing it right. She's going to make me go back to them meetings. I'm going, oh, God, how am I going to do that? One of the hardest walks I've ever made is going back through those rooms and telling those people that I needed Jesus. Not that they needed me, that I needed Jesus. I'm going to tell you, that put me in my proper place, and I've been there since. I need y'all a hell of a lot more than you need me, and I knew that. That's the reason I'm at my meeting, and I'm at least three other meetings a week. I'm there. I'm there early, and I'm there late. I'm there with my hands stuck out, and I'm not over here with my little crowd. I'm usually the last one to sit in, because that's what she tells me I better do. I'm in a dress behind the podium, and I'm in a dress in my own good meeting. As a respect for AA, it ain't got nothing to do with me. She told me that. And I tell you, people in my area started seeing some changes in me. And I had this little girl come in to pass me to their sponsor, and she was a lesbian. Saying, if I got to wear a dress, I said, hell yes, I got to do what you do. I have caught more crap behind that girl in the dress than you will ever imagine. You can't change her sexuality by trying to put her in a dress. I said, hell, I ain't trying to. You know, if I got to do it, she does. They don't understand that. They don't have my sponsor. Debbie has softened me up. She has made me try to be an attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous and quit trying to shove it down people's throats like I tried for so long. So long. She has taught me about commitment. Boy, has she taught me about commitment. I got to share this with y'all. It is something for me. Some of y'all know that Michael gave the committee my name. Michael also gave my name for a trip to Canada, and I've already got another commitment that weekend. So I can't go. So I gave him my sponsor's name, and she's going to Canada. But let me tell you, she emailed me, and God, she does it in such a way, it just makes me just smooth. She said, now that you're so busy in AA and can't go, I will go. You know, and thank you. I'll call Snowden for that. Even being thought of for something like this is just unimaginable. To be here, oh man. Dad, my husband was at a meeting the other night and I had to make sure he did it right. Well, I was kind of chicken, man. I went that by a long time again. He said, yeah, go over there and stick your nose in. If it's okay, just come on back over here. And that's what I did. You know, y'all have taught me that some things just ain't none of my business. Yes, sobriety is one of them. It's been one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do is step back and let his sponsor not sponsor him right. I have caught that line twice since we have been married. He has been sober, and I'm very grateful for that. Now, I talk to my sponsor a lot. He ain't got to do this, and he ain't got to do that, and he ain't. He said, well, Sandy, I'm not his sponsor. Oh. Some things just are not none of my business. I don't know how long I talked, but I do appreciate y'all being here, and thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you.